Gippslandscapes, the podcast sharing some great stories about the local environment from across the Gippsland region. All brought to you by the West Gippsland CMA. Here is your host, Jarek Callanan.
So it was time for a road trip, and a road trip we did have. And along the way, we met this lady.
And yeah, like lucky my husband, you know, he's very, I don't know how you'd say it. He's lovely. He's a lovely, lovely, the nicest man in the world, as locals have called him. And he lets me, he's got the cattle and yeah, that's his thing. But my passion is conservation, and he's allowed me, which, you know, would have to happen. You'd have to allow, because we're a team, to provide habitat for the native animals. But not just that, it's a win-win for everyone. It's a win for the environment, win for native animals, but it's also a win for the cattle, because the cattle have shelter. I mean, like, you wouldn't have a dog out in the open when it's raining or really hot, or, you know, so why would you have cattle in an open paddock with no trees?
Hello there, and welcome to your favourite podcast, looking at all things environment and positive people from around the Gippsland region. More from the person we just heard from there, Danny Matheson Carr, in just a few moments. But today we're off down Phillip Island way to the Bass Coast Landcare Network, a rather impressive organisation doing lots of good work. We're going to stop at the Bass Coast Indigenous Nursery and meet both Danny and her volunteer colleague Anna Spiden, who gets the story going by telling me about some of the main functions of the nursery.
We're actually planting trees, or growing trees from seed. We're germinating, and this year we're actually going to be growing about 80,000 trees. And we're a little volunteer group that started 6 years ago, and we've expanded, which is really great. We started growing trees, I think we had 20,000 the first year, and as I said, we're up to 80,000 this year.
And I like to measure things in tennis courts. I think this site is probably about 4 or 5 tennis courts in size. We've got a lot of cars parked here with your volunteers. Friday morning, volunteer day. Got a young man doing a bit of whippersnipping over there, so a bit of noise in the background. And is that the Bass Coast Highway, not far away?
It is.
Yeah,
it
Bass
is
Coast.
Across the road. This area houses not only the nursery, but it houses the Bass Coast crew, works crew.
Land care crew.
So some of the cars are actually belong to them as well. Okay. So that's why it looks as if we've got quite a few. But we've extended. We've actually started off with about 2 tennis courts, and now we've got the extra. We've actually grown this year.
You're like Flinders Park.
Absolutely.
So tell me about this journey then, from nothing to what we have now and hitting that target of 80,000 trees. Tell me some of the milestones there, some of the people involved, and some of the evolution of it, I suppose.
Well, we started as a little group. I think Robbie Gray actually decided, who was involved with Bass Coast Land Care Network, thought of getting a few volunteers together, and I think we started off our first meeting, there probably were about 12 people, and we're out of those 12, I think about 10 of us still are active members. The 2 others have gone into state, so that's a good sign. We haven't left for any other reason bar our moving places. We started off, and everyone had a different reason for joining. Some of us felt we wanted to give back. We had actually got trees from the network for our own properties, and wanted to do something to give it back. So we decided that that's what we'd do, come back and germinate and help. Others felt they wanted a social connection, and they came. They wanted to meet people in the area. We've got people in the group that just have 5 acres or are in an apartment, and they come, which is just really, really lovely to see. We started, we at that stage had a vision of maybe growing 20,000 trees. And that we thought was huge, absolutely huge. We just would turn up. We all alternated between Wednesdays and Fridays. That got very, very complicated. So it's now just Fridays only, Friday mornings. And we had a most gorgeous person helping us, a very knowledgeable person, Bronwyn Teasdale, would come and help us and guided us through planting and all the aspects of actually growing things in the nursery. It's all evolved. We've actually got bigger and bigger, and every year we seem to be growing more trees. The demand seemed to be there, which was really exciting. Some of us go out, because we're involved with different groups, I am with the Three Creeks Landcare group, we go out and actually plant on people's places. So that was really rewarding to see what we'd grown actually going into the ground, and I think that was, it's been amazing.
So where does the demand come from for the trees? You sort of hinted at sort of land care groups, but is that the exclusive end point, or is it individual landholders? Is it corporations who have to do things? What is it called?
Well,
sort of offsets, that sort of thing?
Well, initially it becomes farmers or landholders apply or put in an application to Bass Coast Land Care and Network, and they then in turn designate where the plants are going to go. I supplement some of the plantings. We don't have every plant that's going to go onto a planting, so other nurseries supply those. And that's the group in itself. A lot of people are wanting the plants, so then we will grow, not specifically for them, but a group of people.
Talk to me about the process, whether you're involved in every aspect of it, I'm not sure, but there's a harvesting of the seeds, and then what happens after that?
Well, we have Jeff Treese or someone actually from the land care, or even Stevie. Sometimes we do go out and collect seed ourselves as a group, local seed, and then we germinate those, and then they go into trays. When they actually grow out, we prick out and put them into Hyco little tubes. From the tubes, so often they need to be then re-pricked again because we've got too many plants in there. They go through a process of going from various igloos to a hardening off area, and then going outside, and then we've got a very big area that they eventually stay in, which hopefully they then get picked up and go out into the fields or go out into to be planted.
What's the timeline around that from
harvest
to going out again?
Well, we start doing our main seeding in about November. So November, and then anything from about sort of now. It will depend on the season as to how wet it is. And we'll probably start planting probably June, from June onwards, because it's obviously in this area it's going to be wet or wetter. We need the water, the moisture. So it's a bit of a time thing, and also it can be time consuming because we need to make sure all the plants, as they're in the hycos, that they are still watered and they're maintained so that they're looking fantastic by the time that people get them. So we're conscious of all of that. So the time frame can change. Sometimes it can be earlier, depending on if the farmer has got his fencing done, he's got the spot spraying done, if they're ready to go and it seems okay, well then they go out and can be planted. That's when the groups come into play, like the Land Care Three Creeks group or the Bass Coast, Bass Valley group. I mean, there's Phillip Island group. There's quite a lot of others. Anderson. The group will go out and help the farmer or whoever it is plant. So I think all the actual crew will go out and plant.
Could this happen without volunteers?
Well, it could, but it'd be very, very, very expensive and very time-consuming. Yeah. And I think it's just a gorgeous thing for the volunteers to do, to give back, and we're all learning.
And we should say you're a volunteer as well.
I am a volunteer. Yeah, I'm only a volunteer.
Yeah. Oh, not only. You mentioned in an earlier response about your own property and sort of coming down here from Melbourne on weekends and then moving down here permanently. Talk to me about your, not necessarily what you've done on your property, but I guess the motivation for doing what you might have done on your property.
Well, I actually landscape gardened before in Melbourne before I came down here. But I have to say, I landscaped and can I just say, sort of was Paul Bangate landscaping, so it was very much clipped hedges and white roses. So I'm now into natives, which is a totally different ball game. So, but I've come down here because when we arrived, we only had cypresses and pines around our place. There were a few trees, and it just looked so desolate, it really did. And we're up on a very windy hill. And the children would come, our children would come down with their friends, and that was their chore. Well, they hopefully lovingly did it, was to plant our plantations. And up from 2000 to 2011, I was doing it with the children or on my own. And then in 2011, Landcare came on board. And I have to say, it was just amazing because I not only did Landcare help, the One Thaggy Secondary College came on board and we started having busloads of children come up and plant. The first group that came up, I think we only had one busload, and by the time 2019 arrived, we had 200 children planting, one big 15,000 trees in one hit. That's from 10 o'clock until probably 12:30, 1 o'clock, and then they'd come down and have a big feed and go home. Those sort of plantings from 2011 to 2019 have enabled us to have over 100,000 trees on the property. And because it could be done in such a one hit, it's so gorgeous to see. And I think one of the thrills was in about 2017, we had one of the boys that was a student come back as an assistant teacher, and to see him back so he could see the planting that he'd done, and he asked whether his girlfriend could come and have a look at the plantings. And I thought that was just gorgeous. If you can only capture one or two out of the whole group, you're doing well. Yeah.
What does the what's the future hold for this little facility here, do you think? It might be sort of, it may not be formal, but what do you think will happen? 80,000 is the target you've hit.
I think we'll be bigger. Yeah. I do think it's got the potential for bigger, which then will mean more igloos and more space. This is the, I can see a very happy future for it. I really do see it as a positive, and if we can encourage more people to come, not that there's a shortage of volunteers, but it could enable us to possibly have another day with more people, and I think that'd be just great. Not only is it that we do the seeding and do other things, we actually as a group go on to see other nurseries, or we're going off to see some bird box sorts that have been put into either forest or people doing it. I think it's a really, really good thing to do. I can see, yes, we'll probably get up to about 150,000.
Oof, big number. All right. Thank you very much. Lovely to chat to you. Thank you. Danny, what is your surname?
My surname is Matheson Carr. The Carr comes from my husband, Brad Carr, who lives in West Creek.
Okay.
Yeah.
And your role here with the Lanka Network?
Well, my main role is works crew. I work on the works crew, the planting part of the year. But then now I'm just for the last year been involved with the nursery, helping out volunteers and helping out the person in charge of the nursery. Just, getting to know from the very start of propagating from the seeds up until the actual planting itself. So learning more about it, yeah.
And we're going to touch on your own work and your own property, but I want to go back a couple of chapters in your story, which is to a very different sort of, well, not really that different a career, but tell us about it.
So I went to uni and I studied zoology. I did a double degree, a zoology degree and an arts degree, majoring in psychology. And I was just trying to work out what I really wanted to do. And that was, in the end, it was like, yep, I've always wanted to work with animals and conservation issues in the world. So after I studied, I got a job at Hillsville Sanctuary, was a zookeeper there for 5 years. And I did a lot of work with the endangered species, breeding them and releasing them in the wild. And that to me was the pinnacle. That was like, I'm achieving something that's big, like that's for the greater good of the animals and the environment. And that was like, what more can I do? And then I met my husband, and then I moved down here in Bass Coast and we got married and had kids. And I was just like, okay, I really need to do something about this farm that I moved on to, because my husband is a farmer. I just saw a farm and I was like, we need some trees. This is not good enough. Because I come from, the Yarra Valley, where it's full of hills and full of trees and beautiful nature. And I just felt like, an empty slate. So the first thing I did after having kids, I got a job at Phillip Island Nature Parks and I worked with the penguins. And then I got a job here at Bass Coast Landcare Network. And ever since then, this is my seventh year. I've just felt really like I'm achieving something big and something I'm really passionate about. And that is conservation and making a difference in my own way as much as I can.
And there's a nice connection, which I probably wasn't even aware of until you spelt it out to me, between the work you do here and the work you were doing.
Yeah.
Habitat and wildlife, for instance.
Yeah, so obviously when you release endangered species, you're breeding them and you're releasing them, like I did helmeted honey eaters, and obviously they need to have a place to have a habitat and to thrive. And I was just thinking when I got a job here at Bathurst Landcare, I thought, well, this is the first thing we should be focusing on if we want to conserve the natural environment and protect native species, is to create the habitat or protect the habitat to give them something to thrive in. So, yes, I was breeding endangered species, but there's no point in releasing them and breeding them if there's no habitat. So this to me is even more important than anything. And I feel every day that I'm planting trees or contributing to the seeding of the new generation of trees that are going to be planted, I'm thinking this is the pinnacle of what I really, really want to do. So,
you know, I do lots of interviews with folks working around land care or revegetation of their own personal properties, what have you. And if you put them all together, it would be very easy for the listener to think, oh, enough is being done. But I know what the response is, because I've just seen you sort of do give me that look. But is enough being done?
No, I just feel like it's, you know, if there's in between paddocks, even if you want shelter belts, or we've got creek going through our property.
What sort of property is it, by the way?
Oh, it's a beef cattle farm, sorry. And when I got there, there was not many trees on there at all. And back in the past, apparently in the early days, in order to get a farm, you had to clear fell everything. And that was what they had to do in order to get a farm, like get some land. So that was what happened with my husband's, you know, relatives back in the day. They clear felled everything. They told me about all the animals that were displaced and the goannas. And I'm just thinking, oh gosh, you know, I want to do as much as I can to bring something back. And yeah, like luckily my husband, you know, he's very,
lovely.
He's a lovely, lovely, the nicest man in the world, as locals have called him. And he lets me, he's got the cattle and yeah, that's his thing. But my passion is conservation, and he's allowed me, which, you know, would have to happen. You'd have to allow, because we're a team, to provide habitat for the native animals. But not just that, it's a win-win for everyone. It's a win for the environment, win for native animals, but it's also a win for the cattle, because the cattle have shelter. I mean, like, you wouldn't have a dog out in the open when it's raining or really hot, or, you know, so why would you have cattle in an open paddock with no trees? So these trees are not just for the wildlife. It's also benefiting farmers with their cattle. For example, in the past, my husband was never able to sell cattle, beef cattle, in the middle of winter, because in winter they lose condition, the environment's more harsh, so they don't tend to put on weight, whereas ever since we've been planting, now there's tall trees, there's shelter. And he says that over the last few winters, that's the first time he's ever been able to sell cattle in the dead of winter, because they are protected, they're sheltered, they're happier, they thrive, they keep their weight. But all this on top of better for our health, better for the native animals' health, and yeah, cattle. So it's a win for everyone. And I encourage any farmer out there to do it, because yeah, it's not just for the environment. If you think, oh, it's this environment thing. No, it's also for your cattle, which means you get more money back in return, and happier animal and animal welfare. Like, it should be an animal welfare requirement. Like, it's a basic animal husbandry, is to have shelter for animals.
Absolutely. Mm. There's a lot of enthusiasm between yourself and Anna over here. Is this a typical Friday, or have I just got you on a good day? What's happening?
Oh no, I'm passionate. Like, you know, I can't stress it enough. You know, just if everyone does something positive for the environment, or, you know, it's not just for, you know, tree hugging hippies, so to speak. It's, you know, we're not like, we're just basic everyday people that want a healthy environment for us, our kids, but also for the animals, the wildlife that, you know, we're supposed to coexist with, not overtake. And also for our livestock. I mean, you know, we need a sustainable way of farming, and this is the way to go. Every tree matters, and everyone in their own world can do the right thing, even if it's just buying recycled paper or recycling properly, or even in their own backyard, providing some trees or anything that you can do to do the right thing for the environment and animals. It'll help everyone.
Tell me, you take a breath there for a second.
She told me
me she couldn't talk.
Really?
I'm your water.
I don't take...
Come over here.
You've got to be careful. We'll take over shortly.
One more question. What are you, in terms of your work and the things that you've spoken so eloquently about, what are you most looking forward to over the next 12 months or so?
I'm just looking forward to every time we plant trees. Every tree that I put in the ground, I feel like I'm doing my bit. Like I can only do, anyone can only do so much in their day, in their everyday life. And putting each tree in the ground is making a difference. Maybe not in the big picture, but for a bird that might land there or insects or something, like you are making a difference, even if it's just one tree. So that's what I'm looking forward to, is every single year that I'm on this farm. I'm actually on two farms now. We just got another farm. And I'm like, yes, you know, an empty slate. Here we go. My husband is actually really for it because he sees a benefit for the cattle as well. But yeah, coming back to your question, definitely anything I can do every day is what I'm looking forward to doing for the environment. Then I know that later on when I've passed away, I can look back. Well, not that I'll be dead.
Not just yet, I hope.
No, at least I need to know that as much as I can do in my life, that's what I'm existing for, is to do my bit every day as much as I can for the environment and conservation.
Delight to chat to you about. Thank you.
No worries at all.
Danny Matheson Carr and earlier Anna Spiden, ending that look at some of the great work the Bass Coast Landcare Network is doing. If you want to find out more, get along to their website, basscoastlandcare.org.au. And big thanks to Anna and Danny for sharing some time with me during my visit. That's all for this episode. Thanks for listening this far. Subscribe, share, review, listen again, all the usual things, of course, that we say at the end of podcasts. But if you don't want to do any of those things, well, that's absolutely fine. And I hope you'll pick up the next episode in a couple of weeks' time. Till then, cheers.